From Greenville to Harrisburg, Middletown to Beaver Falls, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Tuesday's primary election featured hotly contested congressional and state Senate primaries. David Taylor and Stephen Bloom are here for a Capitol Watch look at the results. And State Supreme Court Justice David Wack has abandoned the Democrat Party over rising anti-Semitism. I'll have a town hall commentary on why he should be held accountable for his role in the party's lurch to the left. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania state budget deadline of June 30th is rapidly approaching, and the Center Square reports that, quote, the latest projection from the state independent fiscal office is for a budget deficit of $5.7 billion in the next fiscal year. Yet there has been no public indication by Governor Josh Shapiro or any of the 253 lawmakers of any agreement yet to significantly reduce it. Instead, Shapiro has proposed spending more, a plan that Democrat lawmakers have largely endorsed. Adding to the fiscal deficit is that Shapiro's proposed budget includes two sources of revenue that do not currently exist: taxes from legalized recreational marijuana and taxes on skill games. Shapiro has yet to get a state budget enacted on time during his entire term as governor. A new report from the Commonwealth Foundation finds demand for school choice in Pennsylvania is higher than it has ever been. According to the report, Pennsylvania's tax credit scholarship programs have provided tuition support to more than 1 million lower-income students. That is an increase of 33% over the past decade. Despite the demand, Governor Shapiro and legislative Democrats cut funds to cyber charter schools in the current fiscal year budget, depriving students of educational opportunities. If you want to use a ride share like Uber or Lyft to get around Philadelphia, Mayor Sherelle Parker wants you to pay more. She is pushing a plan to add a $1 per ride tax on those riding around the city. The tax is being marketed as being earmarked for education, but past taxes purportedly to be used for education have been sidetracked to other purposes. The folks at Uber are proposing an alternative, suggesting the city raise its current 1.4% rideshare tax. Either way, passengers would pay more. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. With Governor Josh Shapiro and State Treasurer Stacey Garrity unopposed for their party's gubernatorial nominations, there was little drama on the statewide ballot. But the primary election featured hotly contested congressional and state Senate races. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation are here with a Capitol Watch look at the results. David.
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, my pal Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
It's always good to be together, but I do want to start the program by sharing some sad news with our listeners that one of our good friends and colleagues who was here on the show with us any number of times, Melissa Morgan from the National Federation of Independent Business, that Melissa, God rest her soul, that she lost her long struggle with cancer. So she leaves behind a devoted and heartbroken husband and their two young daughters. So we just wanted to pay tribute to Melissa, her memory, thank her for being our colleague and friend, and to ask everybody to please just say a prayer for her and her husband and their little girls.
Yeah, it's a sad thing when something like this happens, and it's someone that you see frequently, and you miss them, and you see how their kids and their spouse must miss them, and gosh, so tough.
So we're going to soldier on because that's exactly what Melissa would have wanted us to do. She was feisty. So in that, we're going to cherish her memory and carry on in that fighting spirit that she shared with all of us, because she was very devoted to the cause of liberty and free enterprise. And we're going to do right by her. But thanks to everybody listening to please remember Melissa and her family. So we're here this week on the program to do a wrap-up of the recently passed Pennsylvania primary election.
And as usual, Pennsylvania is at the center of the political storm. We've been kind of the tipping point state for control of the U.S. House, and that looks like it's going to continue as the results come in from the various primaries. And one of the things that I think is interesting is there'll be a lot of talk about the primaries, and that's going on for months leading into it. And then the second those primaries are over, everybody's neck and head kind of just snap toward fall, and everyone's suddenly looking at the actual general election, which is coming down the pike rather quickly.
Yep. Everything pivots to the general election. And as you mentioned, there were a couple of really consequential U.S. House primaries in Pennsylvania. The one that really actually determines the outcome in Pennsylvania 3, which is a center city, Philadelphia, and the west and northwest parts of the city. It's the most partisan congressional district in the nation. It's 87% Democrat, held by longtime lawmaker Dwight Evans, who before he was in the U.S. House, that he was a member here in the State House, and that he was the House Democrats appropriation chairman. But in a three-way primary, that the successor to Congressman Evans is going to be State Representative Chris Rabb, who ran as the leftward-most candidate, and that he actually had AOC from New York come and campaign for him, that the other candidates had more of the established and, you know, what had been mainstream Democrats, who I thought were plenty left to begin with, but that Chris Rabb will be a squad member.
Yeah, and that was one of the districts where a lot of money was pouring in. It was not clear from the outset who was going to win that thing, and the result seemed to lean as far left as could possibly be.
Yep.
And I think they wouldn't dispute that's about...
Well, no, and that's actually, I guess that's the point. And if anything, it shows that that's where the energy is on the Democrat side. And so, again, as I mentioned, that's a bedrock Democrat district. And so, barring scandal, I would think that Representative Rabb will be in Congress for as long as he wants. The other contested primaries that had significant results in Pennsylvania 7, which is the Lehigh Valley, to take on first-term Congressman Ryan McKenzie, a Republican, the Democrats chose firefighter union leader Bob Brooks, and that Brooks was the candidate who had been endorsed by Governor Shapiro. So that's a show of strength on the Democrat side for him, although the governor didn't say anything in public. Behind the scenes, he was working against State Representative Rabb winning in Philadelphia. So sort of a split verdict on the governor in that way. The other congressional primary was here in the mid-state to run against Republican incumbent Scott Perry, that 2024 challenger, former news personality Janelle Stelson, again won the nomination to run against Congressman Perry. So that'll be a rematch from 2 years ago.
Indeed. And another, now that race is teed up in this manner, there's going to be a lot of money spent. And early and often, mm-hmm. the money's going to start to flow. So you'll be, whether you like to or not, you'll be keeping track of that race, because it will be advertised so much, at least in the Harrisburg media market.
Yes. You may not be interested in politics, but politics is interested in you. And also, it's the state legislative races are also going to be significant, because, as longtime listeners know, that in the state house, the 203-seat state legislature, that we have 102 Democrats and 101 Republicans. A single seat decides the majority. And so the switch of a few hundred votes in a few different districts would have changed the outcome last time around of who held power. Also in the state Senate, which has 50 seats, that at this moment that there are 27 Republicans and 23 Democrats, that Governor Shapiro is seeking to win control of the state Senate for the Democrats so that he will have unified Democrat government if he would be elected to a second term. And so that's the one of the storylines here to look for is will the governor be successful in having in making Pennsylvania a solidly Democrat state?
And again, the financial resources are just going to be rolling in from all across the country. And because of the more sophisticated way a lot of those national donors think, it's not just that a party in Pennsylvania can have a quiet backcountry election campaign and, mm-hmm. and raise $10,000 or $20,000 and get some traction. The money is now literally they're using almost like a money ball system where they know where the money will mean the most, and these donors are located all across the country, but their money will pour into Pennsylvania,
correct,
specifically into these districts to get the desired outcome. And it's not something unique to one party or the other. It's just the reality that national money is now flowing into these what used to be localized races, but
right.
now it's on a national scale in terms of the spending amounts.
Right, and the national Democrat machine and its related interests sees this as their most significant chance to consolidate power in a major state. Steve, as you mentioned at the outset, that as it stands, Pennsylvania is the largest remaining swing state in the nation, and that's why we're going to get lots of attention whether we want it or not. There was also a very interesting phenomenon that happened in the primaries in the state Senate on the Republican side, that there were three incumbent senators, State Senator Kamara Bartolotta from Washington, Beaver and Green counties, State Senator Lisa Baker from Luzerne County in the Northeast, and State Senator Chris Gebhardt from Lebanon County, also I think a little part of Lancaster, a little part of Berks. But all three of them were challenged by candidates who had big money backing from Pacematic, which is the company that makes the skill games machines. And as you know, as listeners have heard over the past months and couple of years, I guess, that they're supposedly games of skill, which means that technically they're not actually slot machines, although in performance it appears to be the exact same thing to the onlooker. And so these machines that have cropped up at gas stations and bars and restaurants all over, that they have been unregulated and untaxed, whereas the slot machine operators, that the casinos have to have registration fees and pay a big chunk of the take to the Commonwealth. And so you had the Pacematic people trying to essentially hijack the majority caucus in the Senate by winning in these safe Republican seats to change the legislative outlook on their industry. Because as the listeners have heard, that regulating and taxing these skill game machines, these semi-slot machines, has been put forward by Governor Shapiro and others as being a potential revenue source for the Commonwealth. And while my attitude is that things don't exist for the purpose of being taxed, it does seem as though if these machines are similar, if not almost identical, to existing gambling machines, there's no good reason why they shouldn't be treated in the same manner. So you can imagine at this point that the Senate Republican majority is not going to look favorably upon that new skill game industry. And so I think that the likelihood of that industry being part of the revenue source for the upcoming budget just increased dramatically.
And another thought about that race and the outcome, it goes to show the power of incumbency.
Yes.
And if you are a sitting lawmaker and you do the things that are necessary and typical, work your district, get to know folks, help them out when you can, connect with them, it's very hard for someone to come in and run a primary and knock a sitting legislator out of their seat.
Yeah,
and it's really difficult, and the amount of money spent versus the rate of return that it brought nothing. I mean, there was a lot of money spent, and those incumbents survived the challenges.
Yeah, they won comfortably. So yes,
they're all hardworking senators who do those things that incumbents do that it's necessary and helpful to stay in their position.
Yeah, and these are substantial folks that Senator Bartolotta is part of leadership, Senator Baker is the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and Senator Gephardt, small business person. I mean, he's I think of him as a citizen legislator. Like he's not a show horse. He doesn't attract controversy. It just stuns me that he would wind up being the target. And of course, these lawmakers were just utterly demonized and their character is assassinated. And it got very, very ugly. So anyway, fortunately, all that is over, at least for now. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. Yeah, the other news that's probably worth mentioning is that there were four incumbent state representatives who were defeated in their respective party primaries. And I guess in order of descending seniority, State Representative Greg Vitale from Villanova, who had served in the State House since 1993, was vanquished by challenger Judy Trombetta, president of the Haverford Township Board of Commissioners. So that's, for those of us who've been around Representative Vitale for a long time, it'll be strange to be without him. Representative Vitale was one of the most vocal voices in the legislature with climate change, alarmism, and other green causes. So we'll see, you know, to what degree that changes the conversation with that adjustment with the composition of the House Democrat caucus. On the Republican side, that state representative Bud Cook got knocked off in southwestern Pennsylvania, that he was challenged by Benjamin Humble, who had been the president of the Waynesburg Borough Council, volunteer firefighter, and by business, he's in the flooring industry. And so Representative Cook will be serving out this year and then not coming back. Two others, very, very recent Democrat lawmakers from eastern Pennsylvania. You had State Representative Keith Harris from Philadelphia, elected in 2024, defeated by social worker Sierra McNeil. And in the Lehigh Valley, State Representative Anna Tibercio, who was only elected in a special election in February, lost to Allentown City Council member CeCe Gerlach. So
one of the shorter terms.
Yeah, it's one of those things. You never know.
But again, it shows the same thing that we were speaking about when we talked about some of the Senate candidates who face challenges in the House, to see that bipartisan. A couple of Democrats lost their seat. A Republican lost his seat. Again, I think it reflects on sort of the job that the candidates do during the course of the year rather than the campaign sometimes when they're an incumbent. And for whatever reason it was, the voters in that district chose to go in a different direction with the Republican who had been in
that
seat.
Yeah, I mean, that's also that Senator Bartolotta, who had been targeted, that she and Representative Cook had been at odds with one another for some time. So I guess this was a situation where only one somebody had to win and somebody had to lose. And it looks like Representative Cook is the one who's the losing side of that particular power struggle in southwestern PA. So what other takeaways did you have from the primary election, Steve?
The other big takeaways were looking at, of course, the lieutenant governor race on the Republican side.
Oh, right. Yes.
And you may have mentioned that earlier.
I didn't get around to that yet.
In that case, the running mate for Governor Shapiro and was already set, obviously.
Right. Lieutenant Governor Davis was running unopposed.
But the Republican side, the actual
endorsed
Republican. Slot of the endorsed Republican, Stacey Garrity,
mm-hmm.
but there was also a race for lieutenant governor there,
mm-hmm.
a primary as mm-hmm. between two Republicans, and the one that was the one she wanted to take the office in, one was more of a rebellious candidate.
Yes.
And that it was easily, once the votes rolled in, to see that the endorsed candidate won the lieutenant governor's spot. So that just kind of a a bellwether of sorts in terms of the overall results.
Yeah, yeah. The endorsed Republican in the lieutenant governor race, Jason Ritchie, an attorney and actually former steel worker, native of Beaver County, and that Jason is the chair of the Allegheny County Republican Party, that he was the designated running mate that Stacey Garrity wanted. He won that race handily, and so now the slate is set for the gubernatorial campaign for the fall.
And it always seemed a little odd to me that Pennsylvania does it this way, that you know the gubernatorial candidate doesn't get to pick.
Oh, well, sure.
They actually have to stand for election to get the lieutenant governor candidate. And it doesn't really make a lot of sense in a lot of ways.
Oh,
but
yeah, it makes no sense at all. And that it should be changed so that just as with the presidential race, that the presidential candidate can choose the running mate, that the gubernatorial candidate should get to choose the running mate. This is how that Governor Ed Rendell got stuck with former state treasurer Catherine Baker Knoll as his lieutenant governor, even though I believe at the outset that Governor Rendell would have preferred somebody else.
I think with Governor Wolf as well, there was, if I'm not mistaken, there was...
Yes, that's right. That's right.
A candidate he didn't want to win that became his...
Yes, his alleged
his
partner in government, who was then dispatched in a challenge from John Fetterman, which is what launched Senator Fetterman's rise in politics. So, yeah, there's, I mean, as you mentioned, Steve, there's going to be a lot more coming in the fall. So this is just a little bit of a preview of the intense politicking that we'll see through the rest of the year and into November.
Of course, the national media seems to love talking about John Fetterman. So that'll just also be part of what I think we'll see going forward is John Fetterman appearing all over the place.
Yes. Well, it's interesting that we had Senator McCormick here in Harrisburg not long ago. He spoke at Pennsylvania Press Club, and that they are an odd couple. And you definitely know who the Oscar is and who the Felix is, but that they do have a healthy working relationship, and you know, God bless them. They find a way to make it work. We could use a whole lot more of that. Well, I think we've covered the bases here. Our friend Rebecca Euler will be back next program, but we're coming down here to the end of the time that we have. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you do?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org.
Excellent. And as always, folks can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. From Steve and me, thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
State Supreme Court Justice David Wecht stunned Pennsylvania's political world with the announcement that he has left the Democrat Party and re-registered as unaffiliated. It is the first time since 2009, when then-U.S. Senator Arlen Specter switched from Republican to Democrat, that a statewide elected official has departed the party that put him into office. Specter's party switch was one of failed political expediency. Wecht had a more noble reason, his inability to continue belonging to a political party that countenances, even encourages, rampant anti-Semitism. The justice issued a statement explaining his decision. Quote, "From 1998 to 2001, I served as vice chair of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party. In the quarter century that has passed since then, the Democratic Party has changed. Nazi tattoos, jihadist chants, intimidation and attacks at synagogues, and other hateful anti-Jewish invective and actions are minimized, ignored, and even coddled. Acquiescence to Jew hatred is now disturbingly common among activists, leaders, and even many elected officials in the Democratic Party. I can no longer abide this, so I won't. I am no longer registered with any political party," end quote. Justice Wecht deserves credit and praise for recognizing the disturbing trend in his former party. However, as legendary broadcaster Paul Harvey would say, there is the rest of the story. Unlike Arlen Specter, Justice Wecht faces no threat of political retribution. Specter's party switch was prompted by the, pun intended, specter of defeat at the hands of future U.S. Senator Pat Toomey in the upcoming Republican primary. Although Specter was embraced and endorsed by the state's Democratic Party hierarchy, the grassroots rebelled and nominated Congressman Joe Sestak, who went on to lose to Toomey in the general election. Pennsylvania Supreme Court justices serve ridiculously long 10-year terms and then, rather than face the voters in a competitive election, stand for retention for an additional 10-year term. Wecht, along with two of his colleagues, were retained just last year. Thus, he will not have to face voters until 2035, assuming he does not retire at the end of his current term. Justice Wecht must be held accountable for his role in creating the anti-Semitic cesspool that is today's Democratic Party. Now, it is important here to understand I'm talking about the consequences of his judicial rulings, not his personal conduct. In 2015, as a candidate for the High Court, Wecht, as noted, a former state Democrat Party official, campaigned on redrawing Pennsylvania's congressional district lines to benefit future Democrat congressional candidates. This was a clear violation of the judicial ethics, which hold that candidates cannot speak on the campaign trail about how they will rule on cases that might end up before their bench. The impotent Pennsylvania Bar Association turned a blind eye to Wecht's transgression. Once on the bench, Justice Wecht made good on his promise. In an unprecedented move, the state Supreme Court in 2018 ordered a redrawing of Pennsylvania's congressional district lines. A left-wing college professor from California was called upon to draw a new map, which Wecht and his colleagues imposed by judicial fiat. Again, following the 2020 census, in clear violation of the state constitution, which grants redistricting power to the legislature, Wecht and his court allies brought the California college professor back for a repeat performance and then again imposed the current highly gerrymandered congressional district map by court order. The result has been to not only tilt the electoral playing field to the benefit of Democrats, but it has enabled the rise of candidates from the party's extreme left wing. That is especially true in southwestern Pennsylvania, where U.S. Representative Summer Lee has joined with the extremist squad to push a far-left agenda. It should be noted that Lee has frequently made remarks offensive to the large and vibrant Jewish community in her district, espousing the rhetoric that has driven Wecht from the Democrat Party. In those districts, represented by very slightly more moderate Democrats, the acquiescence cited by Wecht prevails. Unlike U.S. Senator John Fetterman, Pennsylvania with the ability for independent thought, or at least the willingness to express it. Thus, the congressional district map imposed on Penn's Woods by Justice Wecht and his colleagues has resulted in the type of extremism he is now denouncing. That being said, let us now give credit to Justice Wecht for his principled stand against anti-Semitism. Let us hope that his new status as unaffiliated will manifest itself by his leaving legislating to lawmakers and basing future rulings not on political considerations, but on the state's constitution. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 31 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WCCL-FM in Johnstown, WBFD-AM in Bedford, along with WIOO-FM in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Frederick W. Anton III Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.